Hey everyone, hope your October has been spooky and fun so far. Thank you so much for joining and listening to another one of my Ghoultober themed episodes. Today's case is, of course, a disturbing one. I'm going to be talking about Alan Menzies, a man who was obsessed with vampires and who was heavily inspired by the movie Queen of the Damned. If you're an Anne Rice fan, you may be familiar with her novel Interview with the Vampire, which was later made into a film adaptation. Queen of the Damned is a movie based off of Anne Rice's novel of the same name, which is the third book of her Vampire Chronicles series. So sit back, relax, and go brew yourself a cup of coffee, preferably pumpkin spice, pour yourself a pumpkin beer, or perhaps take a shot of whiskey, because as always, these true crime cases are not for the faint of heart. Thank you so much for listening. So in today's episode, we're taking it back to 2002, and we're going to Scotland. 22-year-old Alan Menzies was from Fauldhouse, West Lothian. Alan resided at home with his family. His mother, Linda Menzies, was a lollipop lady, which I found out after looking this up, that in Scotland, that means she was a crossing guard for children. From what we know, Alan grew up in a pretty good household. His parents cared about him and nurtured him, but he was always a quiet person, from childhood to adulthood. His mother would describe him as withdrawn and stated that he had very few friends, and Alan rarely ever went out. He was known for having deep thoughts, and he was someone who most people did not understand. His mother even found it hard to understand him and claimed that she always knew something was wrong with him, but she was unsure of what. Alan spent long periods of time in his bedroom. There were times where he didn't leave his room at all. He liked to keep his curtains closed and his room dark. He would sometimes rock back and forth while making noises. He had a really difficult time coping with change, and if he was faced with change, panic would set in. Outside of Alan's struggles, he was always a loving boy to his family. He spent a lot of time meticulously cleaning, and he vacuumed and dusted his room a lot, like pretty much every day. He was someone who always struggled with mental health. He had self-harmed and even attempted suicide on 4 to 6 occasions, resulting in hospitalizations. And on other occasions, he would threaten his family stating that he was going to take his life. And that occurred about 2 to 3 other times. One of the most shocking things happened when Alan was just 14 years old. He stabbed a classmate. He was sentenced to 3 years in a juvenile detention center in which he served his time. But while he was there, he tried to hang himself using his pajamas. Outside of these incidents, Alan would end up back in a hospital for attempting to harm himself yet again, and for leaving a suicide note. When Alan was around 19, his parents separated and he decided to live with his father. Alan's father, Thomas, shared similar memories about the disturbed boy. Thomas stated that there were times when Alan was like any other child or any other teen. He would have his good days and his bad days. And Thomas shared that Alan loved computers and ferrets. He explained that Alan was different after his time spent at St. Mary's, which was the juvenile detention center he served 3 years at. He believed that his son became even more withdrawn and disturbed after that experience. His mother stated that when Alan was 20, they had been standing in the kitchen and he had taken a kitchen knife and made a large cut on his arm. As you can see, Alan Menzies had a lot of problems. He was struggling with something dark and it seems that he never got sufficient help. Now, some of you may be wondering, like, what happened to Alan? Like, what drove him to this point in his life? Because if he had a pretty good upbringing, like, genetics does play a role, but, like, how much of a role does it really play? Well, there was another side of Alan's life that I haven't mentioned yet, so we're going to backtrack a little bit. And although I believe this contributed to Alan Menzies' problems, we can't put the whole blame on it. I think that somebody who struggles like this struggles for a multitude of reasons. So Alan was severely bullied all throughout his life, and this apparently caused him to withdraw into himself and stay away from his peers. He would lose himself in video games and movies, and he slowly became more and more desensitized to violence, and he started having unhealthy fantasies. He started to obsess over serial killers and Nazis. These dark topics occupied a large part of his mind. Alan began to fixate on the power and control that these disturbed individuals had over other people's lives. And power and control was something Alan didn't have, especially in his school setting with his peers. It's interesting to note that he probably didn't like change because he felt out of control and didn't know what was coming. He probably cleaned so meticulously because it was the one thing he could control. And when it came to staying locked up in his bedroom, he didn't have to worry about change, and he always knew what to expect. He also had control when he was alone. And for the most part, he had the power to pick what he wanted to do when he was by himself, and he had the power to make decisions, whereas in school, he didn't really have that. Alan was noticeably different from his peers, and he didn't have friends, which made him an easy target for bullies. Alan's isolation coupled with daily torture from these bullies made him feel suicidal. On one occasion, he even brought a noose to school and showed his classmates and his teachers. He felt alone and he wanted those people to know that they were responsible for his unhappiness. Alan felt humiliated and shamed by bullies. He decided to seek revenge and hurt someone. He wanted to reestablish himself among his peers. He came to school one day and stabbed a classmate who had been the ringleader of his mistreatment. Using a knife he brought to school, he quickly stabbed the young teen. Alan thought this was going to be a solution to his problems. He thought he would be feared and respected. He went from being the weird kid in school to the kid who stabbed a fellow classmate. This isolated him even more. Alan realized that people at school feared him, and it is what he wanted. However, the bully survived and pressed charges against him. Alan had to face a judge, and when he did, he stated that he stabbed the bully as a means of self-defense. And this is when he was sent to St. Mary's for juvenile detention to serve those 3 years. Alan felt so much hatred, and that's why he wanted to get even with those bullies. And I think there's a part of me that can understand this feeling, but I'm not justifying what Alan did because it's never okay to stab someone, obviously. But I think I can understand where this pain and torment is coming from within this kid. I can understand how somebody can be pushed over the edge. With that being said, Alan clearly needed help because, you know, there's a lot of us out there who have been bullied and we did not resort to stabbing the classmate. We somehow figured out other ways to survive. St. Mary's was supposed to focus on rehabilitation and helping Alan, but when he was released, he did not seem changed in a positive way. Remember, his father stated that he became even more withdrawn and more quiet. So no one really knows exactly what happened while he was at St. Mary's, but we do know that juvenile detention or just jail or prison obviously is a traumatic experience in itself. But this institution in Scotland really prided itself on helping these juveniles and like providing a positive environment. Like it's a very different type of juvenile detention center than you would see here in the United States. So I don't know that he was being treated for his mental health during his duration in St. Mary's. But when Alan finished his 3 years, he returned to school and he met a student named Thomas McKendrick. They would quickly become best friends. They were alike in so many ways. Both struggled with socializing. And Thomas didn't mind Alan's past. He was open to getting to know him, and Alan was just happy to have a friend. One night, while the two were hanging out, Thomas asked Alan if he wanted to watch a movie called Queen of the Damned. Thomas enjoyed this movie and thought that Alan would too. Thomas could never have expected what would come of introducing Alan to this film, because Alan quickly became fixated with this movie, and specifically with the main vampire character named Akasha. And Akasha was a beautiful vampire who had incredible power, and she had the power over life and death. She had the power to turn a mortal into an immortal. Akasha had a bloodlust. She was a goddess among men and held the key to eternal life. Alan loved the movie so much that he asked Thomas if he could borrow it, and Thomas said yes. Alan began to watch that movie about 3 times a day, and within a month, he watched the movie over 100 times. He became completely enamored by the power Akasha had, and the movie turned into an obsession. He wanted to know the script by heart. The film was becoming his whole entire life. He grew more and more infatuated with her, and he was becoming attracted to her. Alan's parents recognized a greater disturbance in their son. Whether he was with his dad or visiting his mom, they would hear Alan screaming in his room or hear the soundtrack of the film playing over and over again. His parents grew more and more concerned, and they wanted to get him help, but they were terrified by his fits of rage. Anytime they would talk about getting him help or bringing him somewhere for help, he would lose it. They began to question their son's obsession with vampires. He even tried to convince them that they were real. He told them that he wanted to be a vampire, and this scared them. They questioned him more and asked why he would want to be a vampire, and even asked if he had the desire to drink blood. Alan would respond by saying, "You both just don't understand." It got so bad that his mother opened their refrigerator one day and discovered something nasty. It was a raw ox liver. Alan had placed it in a Ziploc bag and wrote his name on it. His mother was concerned and asked him why he had this animal organ in the refrigerator, in which he lashed out at her for even touching it. He began to eat it raw and explained to his parents that he wanted to eat it raw. They were, of course, horrified. This was unhealthy in so many ways. One, eating raw liver is dangerous due to the bacteria and pathogens that lead to food poisoning like E. coli. Like, ew. And it obviously was just not healthy mentally. Alan was becoming so entangled with this vampire life that he was losing touch with reality. One night, Alan was lying in bed when he saw Akasha come into his room. You could see, like, he's really losing it. He claimed that she promised him immortality and promised that she would make him a vampire. He said that she offered him a deal. She would give him all the power of being a vampire if he killed someone to prove his worthiness. Alan thought it made sense. He could get what he wanted and have the woman that he wanted. He knew he was going to take this opportunity. He just had to find his victim. He quickly felt antsy and pressed for time. He was growing impatient. He just wanted to be a vampire already and be with the love of his life. On December 11th of 2002, Thomas came over to the Menzies' house to hang out with Alan. He could not have pictured what was to come next. Thomas grew pretty irritated because Alan wanted to watch Queen of the Damned yet again for the gazillionth time. And Thomas had just had it. He did not want to keep watching this movie every time that they hung out. He asked Alan how he could not be sick of this movie by now. Thomas stated that he no longer enjoyed the movie at all. Like any interest that he had or any enjoyment he had from watching the film was gone. And he would tell Alan that this movie is not as important as he's making it out to be. Thomas explained to Alan that he was getting frustrated because he wanted to be friends with Alan, but he wanted to do something different when they were together. Anything other than watching Queen of the Damned again. Alan just wasn't having it. He was kind of ignoring Thomas, and this pissed Thomas off. He started to make sarcastic comments about the movie and even called it a stupid vampire movie. And he even went as far as to make fun of Akasha. And that's right, like, oh no, that's like Alan's boo thing. Like, not good. So Alan started to feel enraged and he told Thomas to get out of his house and leave. And at that point, Thomas is just beside himself. He can't believe that they're about to have a falling out over a movie. It just makes no sense to him. So Thomas gets up and he goes to leave. Alan would later state that in this moment, he felt Akasha calling to him and that she was talking to him. Alan told Thomas that he didn't want to see him ever again. Alan would claim that after this fight ended, Thomas left. Thomas would never return home that night and his parents began to worry, so they called the police. Thomas would be missing for weeks and nobody seemed to know what happened to him. People wondered what could have went wrong. Did Thomas leave town? Soon enough, people started to wonder if Alan was telling the truth and if he was involved. Did Alan do something to Thomas? Police would end up questioning Alan, and they believed that he seemed like he had nothing to hide. Alan told police that he had not seen or heard from Thomas, and he explained that they got into an argument. Police asked if he could tell them more about that. Alan explained that they watched a movie together, and they got into a fight, and Thomas left. Police ask if he knows any place Thomas could have gone, and Alan tells him that he can't think of any. They leave their contact information with him and ask him to give them a call if he hears anything at all. At this point, police don't really know what to do. It appears that Thomas has no enemies, and they just hope that Thomas shows up within the next few days. At this point, they classified the case as a missing persons case, but in the coming days, Alan begins to act differently. Alan becomes more reclusive, and his father begins to worry and goes into his son's room to see what he's up to, and he notices a large red stain on Alan's carpet, and he asks him what it is. Alan quickly replies, "I was cutting myself again," and his father believes him because it wouldn't be the first time that this has happened and where Alan had a stain in his room due to his self-harm. Within the next few days, Alan runs into Thomas's mother at the grocery store. And he asks her something really weird and sinister, something that would make her blood run cold. With Thomas missing, Alan strangely goes up to Mrs. McKendrick and asks if a certain product would remove blood stains from his bedroom carpet. And her mind immediately starts to race. Like, could it be? No, it couldn't. This is Thomas's best friend. It couldn't be. But this was the last person Thomas had seen. So after this interaction, she contacts the police immediately and they become extremely suspicious that Alan knows more about Thomas's disappearance. And as they focus in more on Alan, they see his history of stabbing a classmate. Police return to the Menzies' house, and they feel that Alan is not telling them the whole truth. So they decide to do a search around his property and in the nearby woods. And when they do this, they find a shirt and pants that are covered in blood, and they take the clothing and test them. The DNA results eventually came back and determined that it was in fact Thomas's blood. So police return back to Alan, and they now believe they are investigating a homicide. The only thing missing is Thomas's body. Police confront Alan with the evidence, and he continues to deny any involvement. And a day later, after police confronted him, Alan overdoses on pills and ends up in the hospital. And when he was questioned after waking up, he still denied any involvement. At this point, we're on week 5, and the search team stumbles upon a shallow grave near Alan's house. And they look further and discover a body. It's the body of Thomas McKendrick. The scene is grotesque. He was stabbed more than 40 times, and his head had been bashed in numerous times. Police bring Alan in for questioning, and he starts to tell them about his visions of vampires. He also tells him that he believes that he is now a vampire because he killed someone, and that killing was a sacrifice to Akasha. He would state that he knew he had to kill someone to become a vampire. And police are absolutely baffled and horrified. They have never heard a confession like this before. It is just shocking and weird, and like, they don't know what's happening. Police could not understand why he would want to kill his only friend. Alan proceeded to give police all the details. He explained that they got into a fight over the movie, and he explains that Thomas sarcastically asked, "Do you really believe in vampires?" And apparently this made Alan like snap and flip his lid. He felt anger and rage. And in that moment, he claims that he saw Akasha, and she asked how he could let Thomas say horrible things to him about her and about him as well. So Alan grabbed a knife from the kitchen and he went towards Thomas. He started stabbing him over and over again. He stabbed Thomas in the face, the shoulder, the neck, and Thomas was able to run away. He was still alive. He ran all the way up the stairs asking Alan to stop, but Alan just continued to run after him. Thomas even tried locking Alan out of the bathroom, but Alan was able to overpower him. Alan then takes a nearby hammer and bashes his friend in the skull over and over again. Alan claimed that the whole time he heard Akasha telling him to kill. Alan said that after killing Thomas, Akasha told him that she was happy and proud of him. Alan stated that he made fun of his beloved Akasha, so Thomas had to pay. Alan wasn't done with his confession to police. He went on to explain that he laid Thomas on his side, made an incision in his neck, and began to collect the blood in a cup. He then drank it all, but it wasn't enough. He then drank another cup full of Thomas's blood, and he removed part of Thomas's skull and ate part of his friend's brain. When he was finished, he took a wheelbarrow, put Thomas's body in it, and buried him out in the woods. He said that he did his best to clean up the scene so his parents wouldn't ask questions. Alan seemed to have no remorse, no guilt, and no regret. He was certain he was a vampire. And he stated, "I may be given 20 or 25 years, but I've got his soul." At trial, Alan pleaded not guilty due to insanity. But the jury didn't seem to be buying it. Because honestly, things were turning around for Alan. He got released from St. Mary's and he made a new friend. He quickly became best friends with Thomas McKendrick, and people were questioning whether this was insanity or if he was a sociopath who did know the difference between right and wrong. During his time on trial, he would send letters and sign Vamp at the bottom instead of his name. And in his letters, he said that he would kill again if he was released. So the jury believed Alan knew right from wrong, and he was found guilty of murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. And just a year into that sentence, he took his life behind bars. So I don't know. I don't know if he truly believed he was a vampire, because if he did believe he was a vampire, he would know that committing suicide wouldn't work. Unless he was just like tempting this vampire fate and was like, "Let's see if I am really a vampire. Let's see if I can kill myself. And if I kill myself, oh well. But if I survive, like, yeah, I'm a vampire." No one knows for sure. So this is the crazy story of Alan Menzies. and Thomas McKendrick. Poor Thomas, man, he just wanted a friend, and he was willing to see past Alan's faults, and he introduced him to a pretty cool movie that got kind of crappy reviews, but nonetheless, it was pretty cool, and nonetheless ended up dying and being stabbed to death and killed by his friend who may or may not have truly believed he was a vampire. It leaves the question, right? Like, how many other people could be influenced by movies like this? And to be honest, I don't think a lot. I don't even know if Alan truly did believe he was a vampire and believed he was seeing Akasha, or if it was something he wanted to believe so badly that he just kept, like, you know, playing into it. I don't think we'll ever know for sure. I know there are a lot of, like, movie copycats out there, like, in real life, which is pretty scary, but these are obviously disturbed people, and they're part of a minority. I think that despite seeing this movie, Alan would have killed someone regardless. He would have latched onto something else and blamed whatever that was, but I really do believe he would have killed someone. He had it in him. Just like he had it in him to stab a classmate who had been bullying him. Like, you know, the average person that's being bullied isn't doing that. So there was clearly, like, a disconnect. But nonetheless, some people are just more susceptible to the influence of movies and even video games. So with that being said, my friends, that is The King of the Damned. Main takeaway is here. First of all, don't bully people. Second of all, if your kids need help, I don't care how much they're lashing out or how scary they are, throw them wherever they need to go. You know, obviously be supportive. I know saying throw them like that just sounds like insensitive. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, take care of them, make sure they're getting the help they need, even if it involves them kicking and screaming. You gotta do what you gotta do. Just be kind to people, okay? Like, that's all I can say. Lately, I just feel like we live in this very angry world, filled with very little patience. So if the majority of us could spread kindness and, you know, not be a dick, and have a little bit more patience for each other, maybe the world could be a little different. Everyone's got their shit at the end of the day. But you don't have to be a shit person to others. It's hard sometimes, I know. But anywho, make sure you know who your friends are. I know we never truly know a person. Like, you could have your best friend and the next day you're just strangers passing by in the hallway. You know what I'm saying? Or you could have a friend like Alan Menzies, which I really, really hope not. Again, with an episode like this, it's very easy to remember the killer's name. I want you to remember Thomas McKendrick's name. He deserves it. He was a really good friend. And he did not deserve the fate that he was given. So RIP to Thomas McKendrick. So thank you so much for listening to this case. Let me know if you've heard of this one before. Head over to my socials, you know, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. TikTok is definitely where I am most of the time. It's probably my most successful social media platform. So I do spend a lot of time over there if you like frequent crime updates, stuff that I'm not covering on my podcast, stuff that I am covering on my podcast. Definitely go check me out on TikTok. Otherwise, Instagram's where I am, but you'll see, you know, little behind the scenes of my life, kind of. Like, I post more than just about crime in my podcast, and sometimes some silly memes or creepy, horror, spooky stuff. And then on Twitter, I'm kind of just there lingering. I'll definitely, like, talk to people and post, but not so much. Facebook, I'm definitely on the least. But regardless, go follow me, DM me if you want to talk about this episode or if you have a case suggestion. I love hearing from you guys. Or just let me know how you're doing. Let me know something about you. I love to get to know people. Anyway, guys, stay safe out there. Continue to have an amazing October, an amazing spooky season. Go out there and do the things. Go apple picking. Go pumpkin picking. Go frolic around a Halloween store or a party city and just treat yourself, okay? Because you deserve it. Drink all the seasonal pumpkin spice and apple cider flavored and, you know, things and get all the fun autumn candles. And yeah, I'm just such a bad influence, aren't I? But that's where I'm at. I'm very, like, in fall mode here. I just wish it was a little cooler and crispier here in New York. But until next time, guys, have a great week and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.